morning. Today is the third day of session. it's Saturday. So by now, you know, the minds and bodies are not really used to this this experience, you know, and can't emphasize how unusual it is for us to do this, both for ourselves, even though if we do it, you know, once every 6 months or more or less, but also just for human beings to sit down. It's a really, really unusual activity. When would you do this kind of thing, you know, sitting down, sitting quietly for days at a time? It's unheard of. You know, we're all we're all about action, all about, you know, if you're sitting at your desk or sitting on a couch or and you feel uncomfortable, then you just move. If you get bored, you know, you do something else. And I guess the joy of boredom is something that's been stripped away from us in some ways about with the digital age. You know, there's always instant fixes and instant gratification available. I really notice that with my kids, that it's kind of hard to keep them off the screens and just to have that basic creativity that arises when when you're bored. I'm bored. Oh, that's a good thing. Here's a stick. Sticks are vastly underrated. So by the third day, you know, we're quite settled down. I remember Dada Roshi Zen Mountain Monastery said, I think he once offered Dogsana, maybe the first day of session. He said afterwards, he crawled out of the room because he was battered and bruised. He said, he's never going to do that again. On the first day of session, you know, you're everyone's full of questions and your minds are not settled. And so you've got to give it time, just through this natural alchemy of Zazen and the container, for the mind and body to settle. Now, a lot of that dross gets blown away. The usual casual concerns get laid aside. You know, that work, the work begins, you know, we face that that bright mirror, you know, again and again. Yes, I just want to appreciate everyone's efforts for holding us together. You know, it's a really group a group activity, and we all, you know, contribute it by our presence and just taking care of the small things and the big things. To, you know, it doesn't function individually, you know, whether it's the bells or the food or the cleaning or the zazen or the incense. You know, the small mercies of chocolate appearing and, you know, the food there and clean toilets and a clear bell. You know, wonderful things. So yesterday talked about Ekka, Taiso Ekka and Bodhidharma, and that aspect of the the search, you know, the seeking, and that's one of the points I brought up. And today I want to talk. Stretch that on a little bit and talk a bit about just further down the lineage a little bit with Master Hui Ning and with his teacher Daiman Konin or Gunin in China. You know, we We all have, whether we recognise or not, a really strong desire to put our minds to rest. And that's what came up in the koan yesterday. And, you know, that's why we're here. You know, we can either be burning with desire or at a point where we are wanting to clarify, refine or polish, and understand our suffering, you know, the suffering of others, our disquiet, our anxiety. And you know, my Zumi Roshi used to say, Rahatsu Seshin, I've been doing Seshin for years, and so he said when he did Rahatsu, which is the Rahatsu just means December 8th, but it celebrates the awakening of Shakyamuni Buddha, and it's traditionally in Zen monasteries anyway, as a longer session and a bit more intense. And he said, you know, at that session he would present himself to the ancestors. And then once I think some of his students gave Mazen Roshi some acid, LSD, and even then he said he was up all night doing Dharma battle with the Buddhas and patriarchs, constantly practicing no matter what stage you're at. You know, it's never finished. There's that book, famous book by Philip Kaplow Roshi called The Three Pillars of Zen. You know, it's one of the first books a lot of us would have read if you've been practicing for a while, maybe one of the first ones, because it contained all these wonderful, you know, Kensho stories, enlightenment stories, and the three pillars, you know, which were, I think probably might have been Harada Yasutani Roshi, might have talked about these, who was Kaplow's teacher, was Harada Sugaku, was Yasutani Roshi, and Yasutani's teacher was Harada Sugaku Roshi, and so, and then Kaplow Roshi's successor was Bodhin Kohadi, and then his successor is Amala Wrightson, who's, you know, she's the leader of the Auckland Zen Centre. So anyway, these three pillars are faith, doubt, and determination. In faith, so there's kind of like the three stools of Zen, like this triangle, really solid foundation for. And faith, you know, faith is a number of things, but on one level, it's just that the faith that gets you off the cushion, gets you to come up from Wellington to sit down, gets onto the cushion, rather. You know, it's that's kind of faith in our essential nature, or faith that this practice has benefit. And then there's doubt. Doubt is really the driver. It's that edge. It's that question. It's like, what is it? You know, why? What's why is there suffering in the world? Why am I feeling it? You know, is there a way through this? And then determination is that energy, virya, that carries us forward. You know, to keep on doing this, it's that over and over and over again. And we require all three to study Zen. And, and it's kind of like, you know, when you hear three things, there's always a triad is a universal kind of human experience. And in Christianity, there's the Holy Trinity, which is really just a representation of what you would say the absolute, the relative, and the working together of the two. You know, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. And you'll see in Zen, we always talk about absolute relative and the actual, what do you do with it? Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And so faith and doubt and determination are kind of like that too. It's like that faith is the absolute, that bottom line. You know, it's no discrimination. And that doubt is yes, but. I don't see it. And the determination is what you do, it's that activity. So, you know, these our koan system has about 650 individual koans in it. And they constitute, I guess, a teaching method. And starting with usually when the starter koan mu, or the sound of one hand, and then there's in our system there's 200 initial ones, which all a lot of them are just one liners, but also some are pulled from some of the later collections, and then there's 48. And the Mulman Khan, which I'll just talk about a koan today, the Gateless Barrier. And these are collections that were pulled together from various sources and compiled into books and teaching methodologies. Then there's the Blue Cliff Record, which is 100 koans, the Book of Equanimity, which has 100 koans as well. And then there's the Five Ranks of Master Tozan. And then there's 108 koans on the precepts. Missed one before that was the transmission of the light, which is about 52 stories, awakening stories of the ancestors from Shakyamuni Buddha through to Koan Ejo, who's Dogen Zenji's successor. And they're all instructive in their way, in that a lot of them are stories or points from individuals who were involved in this great endeavor, and the people, you know, like ourselves, who raised that great doubt and kind of rode the donkey of faith and used that determination to really understand themselves and the world, and to bring benefit to all beings. So the story is it's kind of the story of a chase, really. And it's the old classic. If you've been around Zen for a while, you've heard it many times before. But it's the koan from the sixth ancestor. Is Hui Ning, Daiken Eno. And when we recite the names of the ancestors, we would have recited Bodo Dharma Daiyosho, Taiso Eka Daiyosho, Kanshi Sosan Daiyosho, Dai Doshin Daiyosho, Diamond Konan Daiyosho, Daiken Eno Daiyosho. So he's his teacher is
Dian?
Going through them again. Gugunin, anyway. Daiken Eno is his Japanese name. And so the story of the sixth ancestor is they stopped calling them, he was the sixth, but there are lots more ancestors, but he was number six in China, and they stopped calling them after, because he was so brilliant. They thought, well, he's the last kind of name, one to get a name, a number, even though so the seventh ancestor must be feeling a little hard done by, I think. Yeah. So, Master Eno, I'm going to read some of this and talk some of this. He was born in 638 during the Tang Dynasty in a poor family in South China. He lost his father when he was still very young, and after that, he earned his livelihood and supported his mother by selling firewood in the town. You think he started his active Zen life when he was 40 years old and died in 713, in the 76th year. So one day when Eno was walking along the street selling firewood, he happened to hear someone chanting the Diamond Prajna Sutra. And it appealed to him. While listening to the chanting, he heard the passage, "No mind, no abode, and here raise the mind. it strongly impressed him. So he asked the monk who was chanting it where it came from, and the monk said that he was a student of Master Gunan of Mount Obai in North China. So he's in the south at this point. And so, and North China is a long way away. And he was and said Gunan is the fifth ancestor. So then Eno really wanted to go and see Master Gunan, so he tried to make it happen. And so he's able to, I guess, eventually search around. He either made enough money or through donations, were able to get enough money for someone to support his mother. And so he headed off north to see Master Gunan. So so the fifth ancestor, Gunan Daiman, lived on Mount Obai, and he's been was a great master in the school, and so he's a teacher there. Then Eno arrives when he was 24 years old, and as he says here, an insignificant, poor, shabby looking youth, but he had a certain amount of spiritual insight. So, and there's a famous story that happens between him and Master Gunan when he meets him for the first time. And the story starts off, so Gunan asks him, he says, "Where have you come from?" And Eno says, "From Rainan, Master," which is, way in the south. And Gunan says, "What are you seeking for?" And Eno said, "I want to become a Buddha." And Gunan said, "You monkeys of Rainan do not have Buddha nature. How can you expect to become a Buddha?" And Eno says, "There is a distinction of south and north for people, but how can there be such a distinction for Buddha nature?" "You monkeys of Rainan do not have Buddha nature." It's a little bit like Bodhidharma and Eka. And so Gunan, I guess, recognises that this young, illiterate person from the south, those monkeys of Rainan, it'd be disparaged because the northerners thought that the southerners were, a bunch of monkeys, obviously. And but he recognised that he had some spiritual aspiration. And so he put him in the kitchen to work as a rice cleaner. Because in those days, the monasteries were quite big, so they had a lot of people who worked in different areas. I remember one of my friends said they always had slaves. I don't know quite what that. Maybe it's indentured servants back in the day. Then Master Gunan is getting old, and he wants a successor, someone to take over the monastery. So he composes a competition. And says, "Whoever can produce the best poem, Dharma poem, to express their understanding, will become the next abbot of the monastery." And so, "Demonstrate your Zen ability and show whether you're worthy to be my successor. So, write a poem and put it on the wall." And then the head monk, Shinshu, there are about 700 monks there, and decided to write a poem on the wall, and in fact he was the only one who wrote the poem, because all the other monks thought he was the head and he should be, so why would they go off and compete with them? So his poem is a famous poem. It's the body is the Bodhi tree, the mind is like the stand of a bright mirror, moment by moment wipe the mirror carefully and never let dust collect on it. And it's a beautiful poem. It's that aspect of practice. Constantly in Zazen, thoughts arise like dust, and we let them go, and then we come back to this bright mirror. So it's a beautiful poem about how to practice. And so Eno thought it was a good poem, and he's about to be 25 at this point. Beautifully expressed, but not quite penetrating. And so he made a poem to express his own understanding, but he couldn't write. So he got someone else to write it on the wall. And I guess it's probably in chalk or something. And And so he takes a bit of a swipe at this poem. It says, he says, Bodhi is not originally a tree, and it doesn't have a bright mirror, nor has the bright mirror a stand. Originally, there is nothing. So where can any dust collect? You know, which is the other side, of course. We wipe the mirror. It's our activity, but, you know, dust is fine. Dust is Bodhi. And everything is clear and complete like this. Even the most hellish suffering. So, even though I think some commentators will say, you know, that his poem is not as good, it's like, it is a beautiful poem. But Master Gunan recognizes that Eno's superior spirituality, in a sense. But of course, because he's a young, illiterate monkey from Rainan, so... you think about that struggle, it's like, God, this guy turns up, he's been here, 6 months. Chinchu's been here for 20 years. He's the head monk. God, what am I going to do? But obviously, this new guy's turned up and he's got it over the head monk. Really tough situation. You see it all over, and it's like, how are we going to... keep both sides happy? And what say I give the robe and bowl, because he has a robe and a bowl which symbolizes the lineage, and you hand over the robe and bowl to your successor, and then I can't give it to this guy, but he's obviously got a hell of a lot of potential, so. And it's like a family tree, you want to carry on the family tree, and you want to give it to the brightest person who's going to benefit others going forward. So what he does, he reads the poem and goes, not good enough, and wipes it out. And but then secretly he sends a message through to Eno and says, I'll meet you after midnight. And so he gives the robe and bowl, the proof of the Dharma transition, but he advises Eno to get the hell out of there, because the 700 monks are going to be pissed off. And so the story goes that he rows him over the river, and hightails it. In the morning, the monks find out about this, and one of them, Monk Myo, as he's called, heads off and, as it says here, among the group of monks who, there's a whole bunch pursued him actually. So they decide to pursue Eno and take back the holy robe and bowl. Among the group of monks who pursued Eno was Myo. He was a guileless, impulsive man with a sharp temper, and had once been a general before becoming a monk at Mount Obi in middle age. So he catches up, and he's very, probably very fit, and he catches up with Eno on the ridge of Mount Daiyurie, and demands the return of the robe and bowl. He's probably a big, imposing person. And this is where the koan comes up. So that's kind of all the story. So the actual koan itself, the case. So the sixth ancestor was once pursued by Monk Myo to Daiyurie, that's the peak. The ancestor, seeing Myo coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, "This robe symbolizes faith, symbolizes the Dharma. How could it be fought for by force? I'll leave it to you, you can take it." So Myo tried to take the robe, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Myo was terrified and hesitated. He said, "I've come for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, please teach me, O lay brother." he's a layperson too, he's not even a monk. The sixth ancestor said, thinking neither good nor evil, at such a moment, what is the true self of Monk Myo? At this, Myo was once enlightened. His whole body was dripping with sweat. With tears he made a bow and asked, beside these secret words and phrases, is there any further significance or not, any hidden meaning? The ancestor said, what I've told you is not secret. If you realize your true self, what is secret is only of your own creation. Myo said, although at Obai, which is the name of the monastery, I followed other monks in training, I did not awaken. Thanks to your instruction, which is right to the point, I'm like one who has drunk water and actually experienced himself, whether it is cold or warm. You are really my teacher, lay brother. The ancestor said, if you are so awakened, both you and I have Master Gunan as our teacher. And live up to your attainment with care. In the commentary from Mumon, he says, of the sixth ancestor, it has to be said that in an emergency, he did something extraordinary. He has a grandmotherly kindness. It is as if he had peeled a fresh lychee, removed its seed, then put it into your mouth so that you need only swallow it. In the poem, you may describe it, but in vain. Picture it, but to no avail. You can never praise it fully. Stop all your groping and maneuvering. There is nowhere to hide the true self. When the world collapses, it is indestructible. So, and it's a wonderful poem. And like I said, there's that first thing about that chase. What Monk Myo does is he's like us, you know, you reflect on yourself, it's like, what is it, you know, what is it that drives us? Why do we come to practice? Why do we pick up a Zen book? Why do we sit on the cushion? In that huge chase by Monk Myo, he runs himself ragged. You know, we kind of sit ourselves ragged. But what he realizes when he gets there is it's not really the robe and bowl, the symbols of success or satisfaction that he's after. And he comes to a point, you know, kind of a stop. And then, you know, Eno, this is one of these very famous, it's very famous now, phrases, you know, it's like, not thinking good, not thinking evil. You know, what is your original face? What is the true self of Monk Myo? You know, not thinking good, not thinking evil. You know, sitting here or down in the trees or whatever we're doing during the day, not thinking good, not thinking evil, not judging things against one another. You know, good zazen, bad zazen. You know, what is our original face? What is your original face? Original face is a kind of a Chinese expression really for, you know, this. It's a I think it goes like, what is the original face you had before your parents were born? And it really just points to this experience now. I remember doing a Zen Mountain Monastery, Zen Mountain Center, with Tenchin. We were doing Dharma combat, so there's, which is kind of a quite formalized thing. The teacher's up on a high seat, kind of a big seat, up off the ground, and then people come up one by one. You normally would give a talk first off, and then I think he gave this talk, and then people come up and one by one, they make a bow, and stand in gassho, and then ask a question. And there was someone very like Eno who came up, never seen him before, you know. Ronan, I can't remember, he was Lebanese extraction, down in LA or something, came up and he posed the question. I think the teacher asked him, so what is your original faith? And then he gave an answer. This guy had no background in Zen. The teacher turns to me and says, to watch that one. There he went on. I think he's a teacher now in Japan. Yeah. I chased him down. So this original face, but all this work, you see, you don't just turn up and experience that original face, the body bathed in sweat, and there's a journey to practice. It's like unless you've experienced the kind of anguish or the pain of trying to see into your own nature, then the practice is more difficult to open. Because we're working with, like I said yesterday, this train of causal DNA from ever. So to really have that, develop that faith to, I guess, matched with doubt and determination, it's a heroic journey. It requires that chasing, that journey, that desire. I think one thing too is to note that when we go a little bit further on in the koan, then he asks, Myo asks, is there anything hidden? Is there anything more? And Eno says, basically it's like it's totally exposed. There's nothing hidden. Nothing hidden. There is no secret teaching. Nothing hidden. Everything's bright as you see it, as you hear it, as you think it. Direct truth. And so it's kind of a wonderful teaching in some ways, because as our session carries on, that nothing hidden allows us to open that container. So when we sit there and confusion arises, we practice like the first stanza. We wipe the dust away. So we pay attention. Kind of come back to that bright mirror on the stand, and with as our practice matures, that confusion is the bright mirror. It's already complete. I remember doing a koan with my Zumi Roshi, and I talked about this before, but there's one about part of the 200, and there's one which goes, so if the devils all come out of hell with a cart and ask you to ride in it, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do? Arjuna Maharishi, he says, fear. Fear is Buddha nature, Phil. I was trying to, you know, make some kind of thing that I would do with the devils or something. Get the fuck out of there! You know, is that when we talk about our experience is always total. Whatever arises, you know, is the Dharma. We have to be a little careful with that, but on the aspect of this direct experience, you know, and usually around Sesshin, we're really kind of paying attention to this direct, you know, the direct thing as it arises. So confusion arises, fear arises, and we swallow it. So there's no secret teaching. It's like whatever arises is the teaching. You know, Buddhas appear around corners. The Dharma on a street sign. So, yes, and the beneficence of this, you know, this world that presents the Dharma, you know, to us, you know, just like this, and you know, we need to wipe that dust away to appreciate it. So, yeah, we've got one full day to go, you know, and really, you know, use that time well. You know, we don't know when when we'll meet again under these circumstances. Things could change. I don't know, this place is going to disappear at some point, I just know. Mm. It's on a river valley. Mm. It may not be today, you know, it may not be tomorrow. We don't know the future, so we just take advantage of what we have, and what we do have at the moment is a one full day, some concentrated effort, you know, in a group of you know, lovely people to practice with. Yeah. So let's take care of it.